How's everybody tonight? Doing well? See, who was not here yesterday? That's just going to change the way I introduce a little bit. A few people? That's plenty. Thank you for being here tonight. I want to review just a couple of things that we talked about yesterday because they really have a lot to do with what we're going to talk about tonight. I want to lead into this by giving you the agenda again. It's been up here for a few minutes, and I know you've had time to read it. Last night we talked about, before I say I do, and things that you might want to know about your spouse or potential spouse or anybody you want to have a relationship with, as far even as friends. You know, before you engage in a relationship, what do I need to know about somebody? And these are things that are important to us. And we talked about saying thank you and the importance of how saying thank you can help other people learn about us. Remember that? By saying thank you to things that I truly appreciate, you now know what I truly appreciate. And it's going to help you as you lead and coach me. And vice versa, when you say thank you, I'm going to pay attention to that. And I want to focus on you. And now I know what pushes your button. Remember, we talked about that a little bit. So tonight's about establishing family relationships. And besides awareness, there's another word we're going to have in just a few minutes. Oh. Drum roll. Not yet. Hold on. Don't rush the stage. I want to review just for a second, just for the sake of those who are not here and to get everybody's brain going back in the same motion. We talked about normal relationships are a man and a woman, and that's it, and that's fine, and that's the way God started it. But we also know that if we put God in that relationship, that now it's way stronger, because now I have a responsibility to God to keep that relationship together. And she has a responsibility to God to keep that relationship together. And this is going to be a lot stronger because I have to basically say I'm willing to lose my soul to dissolve that relationship. You might as well say that out loud. I'm willing to lose my soul to dissolve that relationship. Do you see how powerful that is now? I now have a responsibility. It's going to determine the rest of my, beyond my existence, by how I react to her, or it could. Again, we know all the lessons about extenuating circumstances and what the Bible teaches about infidelity and such like that. Those are things that you've all heard. I'm trying to approach this again from a bit of a different standard, and that is, how can we keep that from ever happening? I'd rather do a little preventative medicine to find stuff at the source. We looked at Ephesians 5, 28 and 31, about how men ought to love their wives, that's agape their wives, that love in spite of, as their own bodies. I need to, you know, Kathy needs to be just as important or more important to me than myself. So therefore, we, you know, that's cement. And if she does that for me, then we really are going to find a way to make our relationship succeed, and no matter what happens here on earth, we're going to do that. And of course, the godly standard is that for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and the two shall be one flesh. And remember, we talked last night about how Kathy plus I is greater than Kathy and I. The union that a godly couple has together is way more powerful than the sum of the two parts. Because together we work better, and we are a team, and teams are more powerful than individuals. They just are, and it's the way it was designed. Why do you think they have brainstorming and think tanks and people that get around? Because as you bounce stuff off people with other personalities, that you grow in knowledge, and the things that you discover become more powerful. Well, a marriage is like that. And now let's throw some other people in the mix. Dynamics. The family dynamic is a husband to wife, that's a relationship. A father to a child, that's a relationship. A mother to a child, you know what? That's another relationship. Child to child, that's another relationship. Now let's put God in each one of those, and there's not enough room on the slide. And the mathematician over here could probably tell you how many actual dynamic relationships there are in something like this. Many, many, many. Because now if I get husband and mother and child together, that's a third relationship. There's all kinds of different things here, dynamics that play on us. And if we don't apply something to these to keep control of it, it becomes chaos. And I've been in a lot of homes in my secular job that were chaos. I've heard a full-grown woman using language that I have never heard on the in the locker room to a four-year-old child. Calling a four-year-old child stupid and ignorant and using and foul language the whole time and bullying a child of that age. I've seen that happen, and I'm just like, yeah, I hope she don't get mad at me. I don't want that. And I'm not trying to imagine and empathize with this young child of what it's like to grow up in a household like that. It must be awful. And you wonder why when I'm out there working in the streets of Oakland, you wonder why they're shooting at each other. They're mad at the world. And mom and dad taught them to be that way. So how can we keep that from happening? And how can I keep my kids from becoming like that? What leadership can I apply? Oh, I said one of the words. That's that's not the word for the day. Don't get excited. The husband, the dynamic there. Husband comes home. I'm like this. Okay. I come home and I've been under people's houses. I've been up poles. I've fought off pit bulls. I've crawled under a house and come face to face with a cat carcass. That's not a lot of fun. So the skunk out back here was nothing tonight. I've been through worse. I've put my hand through a dead cat. It's just not, you know, stuff like that. So I don't come home and bother Kathy with that. Now, we may mention it later on, but I don't come home, oh, you wouldn't believe what happened today. This rat, cat, gunshots, drugs, you know, I mean, we talk about it eventually or it'll come up in conversation, but I don't want to come and destroy her day with what I've had to deal with. And I come home and hopefully she doesn't want to disturb me with the diapers and the tantrums and, oh, so-and-so at school today said this. You know, we, in preference to one another, a lot of times we bottle ourselves up and we don't let the other person know what we've gone through. So we have families, these dynamics that sometimes are existing in a void, a tremendous black hole that kind of sucks the energy out of a relationship because we don't open up and share things and we don't let know, hey, you know what? I want to chill for a while, but I'd like to tell you a couple of things about my day, and I'm not complaining. I just need to bounce them off you. Because nobody wants to come home and hear whining, right? Because guess what? You ladies who think that you have whining with kids have employees. Guess what? Yeah, I don't come and bother her with that. But, you know, grown men can whine a lot. Okay, so now you know. They whine at me so they don't have to go home and whine with their wives. But father and a child, that's a relationship. And unfortunately, in our society today, this relationship here almost doesn't exist. Because today they want us to work 60 hours, 70 hours a week. I've had to do that for nearly 30 years. And now you have to find time to be a leader in the home and to foster these relationships and help them grow. And child to child. Now, I don't have any, you know, that's child to child, but we need to be aware of our children's relationships to one another and help coach and develop those relationships and teach them how to get along with siblings. Because, you know, I know Kathy, there, you know, she's gone years sometimes without talking to her sister. And I know that my sister, you know, we had odds, you know, when we were young teen and such like that. And that's an awful thing. Kathy's mother didn't, you know, her and her sister were, you know, oil and water, baking soda and vinegar. When they get, they froth up when they get together. It was just an awful thing. But those relationships, you know, I kept telling my daughters, I said, you know, when they would scuff a little bit or snap or, you know, okay, I had three girls. They're going to do a little bit of that. But when they did that, I'd say, one of these days, you're going to leave and wish you had a moment with your sister. And you're going to wish you had that support. And I tried to use that as leadership. I just want you to think to the future. You need this relationship in the future because we're not going to always be here. You need family. And you don't want to have that irritating relationship for the rest of your life. These dynamics are all there and they exist. So what can we add to these things to help and to pull them all together and to make them something that we can have an influence over for the rest of our lives, and to have children that grow up and are solid, and they're good citizens, and they're good Christians, and they're good husbands and good wives. What does an American family really need? Say God, you'd be right, but we know that part. We talked about that yesterday. But what does the American family need? Just forget the church for a while. What does the average family need? That. Because too many times, Dad's too busy. When he comes home, I don't want to be bothered, and I'm not going to get involved with leading my family. Now, make something clear. The family does not need bosses. The American family got plenty of bosses. They just don't have many leaders. Leadership is not bossiness. Bosses push, leaders pull. You think of our relationship with our Creator. And He's allowed us to have a leader-led relationship and not a bossy relationship. God has let us make our own decisions. And He coaches and encourages through His Word to help us make the decision. He's provided everything we need for life and godliness. It's all there in front of you. And when we need encouragement from a brother, he provides brothers who can help encourage us and lead us and tell us which way we need to go. When we start to step off the path, He guides us back to the path. God is a coach. God is a leader. And His Son came to earth, and He was the perfect example of a coach and a leader. We'll talk about that Sunday morning. But you just stop and think about how many families you've known where Dad was a demagogue, or Mom. I'm talking about somebody, or a narcissist. Somebody's got to have power. You know, flex the muscle. Why do I need to do this? Because I'm your dad and I said so. Well, that's not exactly acceptable. Sometimes you need to be that way when their safety is concerned. When it concerns whether they survive or not. You know, I said so. We'll talk about it later. But the other times we need to teach children how to become leaders. Just pose a question to you. What's wrong with letting a child lead something in a home? You ever thought about that? Little Johnny, I've seen you've had problems taking out the garbage, though we've asked you to. First of all, I appreciate your efforts. But so that you learn how to do this, I'm going to put you in charge of garbage in the house. Now, when you put a child in charge, now you're giving them the authority to coach you on how well you conform to their standard of taking out the garbage. You think that's a powerful leadership lesson for a young child? We don't teach kids how to lead. I don't think anybody's ever said, Dave, I want to teach you how to lead. They've taught me how to lead singing. I appreciate that. They taught me how to lead a worship service. I really appreciate that, but they've not taught me how to lead individuals. And what I've learned about leadership in my life, besides this school I got to go to, and I'm very thankful for that, but what I've learned about leadership has come from watching leaders, and I appreciate every one of those. Brother Roy Holland, who has passed away now, and he's responsible for me becoming a Christian too many years ago to count. I'm not even going to speculate on a number. A long time ago. Back close to 1968. Long time ago. But Brother Holland was very instrumental in getting me started in the right path. And without saying, this is how you lead, he showed me some leadership skills that were very important. It was VBS time at Palo Verde Congregation in Tucson. And I was a freshman in high school, probably, or somewhere around that neighborhood. I don't remember the exact year. And this is before we had Google. And we didn't have USPS.com, the postal service thing. And we had 10,000 legal size envelopes. And we needed to put zip codes on all them things. Some of them had zip codes, but most of them didn't. We were inviting all these people to VBS. and we needed to put zip codes on all those. Now, today, what would you do? USPS.com, you type in the address, this is the zip code, all 9 digits of it, right? Back then, you had to look on a Thomas Guide map, find the house, get the section, and then you had to cross-reference the section to the zip code map. And it was time-consuming. I spent several days doing this, and I had a deadline. But when I got done, he said, first of all, these aren't just envelopes, these are souls. Because this might be what God is delivering to somebody to teach them the gospel the only time in their life. Wow. Well, you put it that away. Now it's important to me. But what a leadership trait. He gave me a task. He was specific in how it was to be done. He made it important. Gave me ownership of it. I'm not going to come in here and check on you. You see me if you need help. And when it's done, you let me know. And you stop and think. You say, okay, that was a man teaching someone how to lead. Because I look at his skills and I want to be Roy Holland to somebody else. See what I mean? Teaching people leadership skills and doing it in the home is so important. And it's a way that you can contribute to the salvation of your family. And that is to lead them properly and teach them. So we're going to talk about leadership quite a lot. In fact, tomorrow's whole lesson is about leadership. But I have to set it up first. The leadership is, first of all, I'm going to tell you something. People love to be led. Realize that? If people didn't love to be led, Adolf Hitler wouldn't have had a leg to stand on. People love to be led. Why is that? If you lead, it eases my burden. You're carrying the weight. All I'm doing is I'm just the worker bee, and now I can focus on just doing my little task, and I don't have to worry about the burdens of leadership. If you lead, I'm willing to do that. I'm going to surrender my leadership on some things, unless I'm a narcissist or, you know, somebody who has to be, you know, power monger or something like that. But I'm talking about normal human beings. If you lead, it eases my burden. It makes my life easier, and it lets me focus on what I need to do. And sometimes it's my turn to lead, and I realize that. And hopefully people would share leadership roles in a group. But it does help that. First of all, it is a service. That's why we don't talk about bosses, we talk about leaders. Leadership is a service. Elders are servants. Preachers are servants. A father is a servant. A mother is a servant. We are there to facilitate and encourage someone, the next generation, to come along. We're in there for service. The great leadership skill, coaching. We already mentioned that a little bit ago. Coaching, and we're going to talk a lot about coaching. Everyone can share in the family leadership service at times. My boss's boss, I got to meet a few weeks back, said, if you ever see a way that I can improve, I want you to coach up to me. What? Coaching up. I would encourage you to encourage your children to correct you if they can. Coach up to you, to let you know that, you know, Mom, it upsets me when you talk in that tone. Can we find another way? And there's ways of saying that. There's good ways of saying that without being disrespectful. And if it's just, I had a boss that was kind of brash. I said, and I just, matter of conversation, you don't want to know what really pushes my button. And I just said it just like that. You know what really pushes my button? Is when somebody just asks me to do something and trusts me to go do it. I think that's just the best thing in the world. And I'll give 5,000% to that effort. Now, what was I saying, really? You're too brash and too forward and too much of a micromanager. But saying it that way, I would have gotten nowhere, would I? But by offering him what would be effective with me to get the best out of me, what a great gift I could give to him if he's willing to take it. Your children can do the same thing. My mother, when I was in third, fourth grade, smoked those awful Benson and Hedges 100 cigarettes. Now, they stunk. I'm sorry. They were awful. And there's something about, you know, that plus the fact that she smoked it all and I had bronchitis trouble and things like that. You know, if mother came in the house, I would get nauseous. And I had to coach up to my mom. Mom, I'm worried about you. This can't be good for your health. And people were just now starting to know that smoking was bad. They used to have an ashtray in the elders' meeting room. You know, because they all smoked cigars and cigarettes and pipes and stuff like that back then. So this is a transition time for us as Americans. But I just told her, I said, it makes me sick. I need, when you come in the house with that. So it would really help me if you do that. And if not, can I go live with Grandma? But she quit smoking. But I could have been disrespectful about that. And it could have been a war, but I something gave me the wisdom to talk to her in that way. First of all, I didn't want to get lashed because she could spank. Word for the day yesterday was awareness. Being aware, knowing what people's buttons are, knowing what pleases people, knowing what upsets people. I really appreciate the ladies at Hayward because they know that I'm allergic to raspberries. So when it comes birthday cake time, they don't get raspberry filling, so I can't have any. It's a simple thing, but I really appreciate that. That pushes my button. All kinds of things. What makes me is tones of voice that bother us. You know, why not let that be known in a respectful and kind way that when you talk like that, it doesn't help me. You know, let's work out another way of doing this. And you know, of course, I'm talking about older kids. I don't think a 4-year-old is going to be able to do that, but you learn, as parents, you learn by looking at your kids and watching them what pushes their button, don't you? If you're engaged and you can stare at them and see what's going on and you're paying attention when you say something, I'll tell you a secret about Elizabeth. I could look at Beth and make her cry. I knew the look. I knew what it felt like. You know how you know what it looked like? Like that. she'd just do that. And so I had to be careful not to give that look when I was around her because she would cry. It very young. So that's all part of our word for the day, which is going to be engagement. It's taking the awareness that you have. That's not up there yet. Taking the awareness that you have and putting it to work. Engagement. So the word for the day yesterday, awareness, was goals, joys, triggers, places, comfort buttons, things that help us to understand individuals so that we can be better coaches and peers to them, or parents, or co-workers, or elders, or whatever relationship we have. Things that help us to interact with people better and understand them. Knowledge does change how we treat others. And again, yesterday, you know, unless you've got an illness of some kind that keeps you from being able to do this, most people like to please others. There's a show on. I would encourage you, if you watch any TV at all, I don't watch much, but we do record a little bit of this, and we watch it a bit when I'm home. It's called Right This Minute. And all it is, it's on Channel 2 over in Hayward. I don't know where it is on the cable. But it's just a bunch of videos, and there's a lot of cutesy things, a lot of feel-good stories in there where they just take a video and they show it to you and they tell you the background story. And they had this guy challenge them to pay forward some things and do good deeds. You know, because there was all these videos with hate stuff going around and people pranking stuff. Well, I'm going to do, instead of pranking, I want to do good things. So they had a guy start that thing, and there was a movie even a few years back called Pay It Forward, where you basically you do a good deed and you say, says, yeah, now you go do a good deed for somebody else. I challenge you to do good to somebody else. And it's amazing what kind of response these things get and how many people get involved. People that with no religious affiliation whatsoever will go, and one girl says, well, okay, she's videoing this for the TV. I just want to let you know, this older couple's in line. She goes into Walmart and pays for whatever they're buying. And she just basically here, I want to pay for their groceries today. It's a simple thing, but the people love to do good. And people love to be led and they love to do good. What better world could they be except that we become good leaders and aware of each other and we all practice the same thing? We're going to be stronger people. We're going to be better leaders and better parents and better husbands and better wives. Matthew 7:12, you might recognize that. Do unto others before they do unto you? That's wrong. Thank you for do unto others, then run away. No. It's treat others the way you want them to treat you. I'll paraphrase that just completely. But it's not do unto others because they do good unto you. It's do unto others the way you want them to treat you. And getting involved with people and knowing them is an important part of that. So, priorities. I can't control the rain. This is a very important piece here. And, you know, yesterday I told you about saying thank you, and that was my little golden nugget thing. Okay, this is free. In case you don't remember anything else, take this and use it, and it'll help you out, right? Second stress reliever today. I can't control the rain, but I can get an umbrella. What? I want you to picture your life right here. Draw a big circle, and this is everything that you touch or you interact with in your life on a daily basis. Your job, school, work, traffic cops, Starbucks, Denny's, whatever you do, this is everything there. Everything that touches your life in any way, shape, or form. That's a pretty big list, isn't it? That's a huge circle. We're going to call that the circle of concern. Things that affect your life, or they can touch you, or they can hurt you, or they can help you. All these things that interact with your universe there. We're going to call that the circle of concern. Now we're going to draw another circle in the middle of it. This is the important circle. That's the circle of influence. We are affected by so many things in the world. So much stuff pounds upon our shoulders every day. And the busier the world gets, the heavier everything is. We have to learn to realize, and it's very healthy to understand, this is really all we can do anything about. So why worry about all this stuff? It's very stress relieving to take that little outside area there. It's there. You can't ignore it because it touches your life. But if you focus your energies on what you have influence over and put your energy and time there, put your emotions there, then get an umbrella. Deal with it. Why worry about all that other stuff? And this is going to be, we're going to refer to I can't help any do anything about it stuff or circle of concern. I wanted to let you know what I was talking about here. It can't rain, get an umbrella. My dad has dementia and Alzheimer's. I can't do a thing about it. I can't fix it. I can't heal it. It concerns me greatly, but I have no influence over its result. All I can do is love him and make sure he's taken care of. I can't worry about it. All I can do is take what I have influence over, pour my time and my efforts and my heart into that, and then I don't have to, and I'm a little less stressful. I can go, I wish I had control influence over that, but I just don't, so I need to focus on this. If it helps you shift your focus and helps you get rid of some of that stuff that clogs up your brain, clogs up your time, then it can really help you as you focus on your leadership and your family and those of you servants in the church, elders and such. You know, those things, you know, I can't fix that. What are some other things that we have no control over that might affect you greatly? How about sociopaths? I saw a story the other day, I'm ashamed to say, on Dr. Phil. I had this week off, okay? So I watched Dr. Phil the other day. And it's about this girl in Texas. And it was a Christian family. They had a scripture written on the house, you know, on their little estate there. They had a scripture from Joshua written and burned in wood on the nameplate out there. All the neighbors just were sure they were the greatest family there was, and that the kids had it so well, and everybody was so well behaved, and they did well in school. And if you were to take a picture of modern day Norman Rockwell, there it is. But one day the girl, she gets a boyfriend. And the boyfriend is well, I'm going to explain this in a little bit. But twixt them, they decided that, well, he's not acceptable to the parents. So she decided they ought to murder the whole family so that he can be with her, she can be with him. Where did that come from? Where did that, what brought that up? And she did it. You know, she had the boyfriend and some friends. They tried to talk her out of it, but they went and did it anyway. They're on some bad drugs. I mean, come on. Everybody goes against their morals and scruples that they've been brought up for, to, and knowing that nobody's going to get away with this, right? I mean, this is just terribly obvious. Nobody's getting away with this. Well, it turns out the dad lives, and he points the finger at the boyfriend and the girl. She's in prison for the rest of her life, as well as everybody else. And it's a real sad story. And they keep asking, what happened? And he never could answer the question, really, because I'm sure he'd like to know. But I'll tell you this, and what I'm speculating, that things were going along well, and it's, if you don't provide leadership in the home, Satan will. I'll just put it that way. If you don't provide a leader relationship in the home, Satan is going to provide it. This young man came along, led her to change her heart and do these things. Satan's going to provide a leader if you don't. He's looking for the opportunity. So this is terribly important for us spiritually, to guard our families and to lead them to heaven. We need to be the leaders, and we need to be better leaders than Satan can provide in the home. It's a very sad story, but it's just so, you know, she's a sociopath. The young man she met's a sociopath. There's nothing you can do about that. You know, there's the wiring's crossed, and it very could be that she was capable of doing that all along, and they just couldn't see it. Schizophrenia, bipolarism, there's a lot of things we really can't do anything about, can we? We just need to get an umbrella and deal with them the best we can, as much as we have to. Word for the day is engagement. Now, before a man and woman get engaged, they should be engaged. That sounded like a circle, didn't it? It really was. We need to be engaged with one another. And what engagement is, again, that is putting action behind your awareness. Engaging is using the things that you know, and it's getting involved. When they at work, when they say you need to be engaged with your technicians, I said, we would barely know each other. I knew you'd get that. You need to be engaged with your technicians, the guys that work for you. What they mean is, I need to know what's going on in their lives a little bit, because it affects their safety. If a guy comes to work and he's all, like, you know, he's all spazzed out, I'm not going to let him get in my $25,000 truck and carry my millions of dollars worth of liability insurance around with him and offer people an opportunity to sue me. I want to find out what's going on. You know, it's important to me that he is focused on the job during the day, because he could die or he could kill somebody else. We have a very hazardous job. And they climb 25 feet up in there. I want him focused on what's going on. So if he's not, I need to know. I need to be engaged with that individual. I need to be engaged with them where they are during the day. I've got all the GPS and all the stuff like that. I can find their truck within 15 feet any time of day I want to. I just assume, call and say, hey, how you doing? This job going all right? You getting stuck? You need anything? And now we can talk, and now we have a rapport, and we can communicate. And just because it's important to them to know, the ones that might be tempted to goof around, it's important for them to know that I'm engaged with them, that I'm part of their life when they're under my payroll. And it's a very important part of our business. Well, don't you think it's a more important part of your family to know what your daughter or your son are feeling at any point in time? Is it important that I understand what Kathy's feeling at any point in time? It concerns me greatly. When I think she's upset or something, I want to know why. I want to be engaged in that. It's real easy for me to... I just forgot I left something at work. Yeah, you calm down, I'll be back in an hour or two. You know, it's real easy to do that, but it's more important that I'm engaged with what's going on. Now, sometimes it's time for me to walk away because that's the right thing to do, and that helps her. You know, and I'm speaking generically, not just of Kathy. I'm speaking generically. Sometimes it's the right thing to do, but you know that, don't you? Because you're engaged with them and you're aware of what makes them happy and sad. You know, what do guys do, Matt? Push, 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 push. Good, just tell me what's wrong. Just tell me what's wrong. I just want to know what's wrong. I'll help if you just tell me what's wrong. What? He's got so much to look forward to. I'm picturing him in a relationship. I just want to know what's wrong. We make fun of it because men and women are strange things. You know, there's a reason God put us together, is to keep us from killing other people. we need to be engaged with one another. Sometimes that means I know when she needs her space. And she's allowed my guitarisms because it helps me to unwind and go in the back room, and for 15 minutes doesn't interfere with anybody's day. I can go back there, ling, 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 ling. I'm better now. The world is a better place. I've made music. So engagement is the art of putting my awareness to work. And I said art because engagement is a tremendous leadership skill. It's where mom leads in the home, and it's where your kids can lead in the home, and it's where dad can lead at home. Everybody in the home's a leader because we're engaged with one another. Because I know a lot of big brothers that have little sisters, and they know what's going on at that kid's school because they want to protect little sister. Great thing. But they're engaged with it. How's things going at school? It's hard for parents to understand what's going on. The pressures they have at school, I mean, that's 30, 40 years ago. I can't remember that stuff. You know, the peer pressure, the test, the bullies, the shoes. How important shoes are. Oh, they got a better phone than I've got. Speaking of which, better put that on silent. Oh, it's off. Good. I hate that for that thing to go off. But being engaged and being in focus with another and getting in tune with another individual. Now, I want you to picture a world or a congregation where an eldership is in tune with the membership, where they are engaged with members. Wow. I've been part of that one time in my life. And it's sad now that so many congregations in California are so small that there's not many elder qualified men going around. We're dealing with that pain over in Hayward right now and trying to find 2 to 4 good men who are qualified to be elders and who have the desire. It's tough because children need to grow up and understand what an eldership is and to be under the direction of elders just one time in their life. And I'm so thankful to God that He put me in a congregation with real elders. Now, when I say real elders, they're all real elders, but I'm talking about guys that godly men who were in a position to get involved with human beings' lives, to understand them spiritually, to help them to grow, and to direct them, and to lead them on a path to salvation. Wow. I was 14 years old once, a long time ago. I was 14 years old. And I noticed Brother Lockett Elrod used to sit near me all the time, and it just bugged the tar out of me. Brother Elrod, he looked like Jonathan Winters. You know who Jonathan Winters is? We thought he was Jonathan Winters' brother, but he looked like Jonathan Winters, and he even talked like that. He even had that little talk to him. We couldn't get him to do imitations, though. We really wanted to. But Lockett Elrod, old Texas boy, and he sat near me, and I noticed it because when he sings, it's rather distinctive. So I'd sit in a different part of the auditorium next time. And we sat 1,200 people at the Palo Verde congregation, and we had 3 services. You know, so, you know, it's pretty easy to blend in there, but Brother Elrod would not let me blend in with nobody. He's always right here or right in front of me or right near me. Never sat right beside me. He's just always around me. About a month and a half of this. Now, my dad was an elder also. But about a month and a half of this, Brother Elrod comes to me and he says, Miller, That was my name, apparently. He says, I think you have the talent to lead singing. Really? Well, you carry a tune well. You've got the right pitch that you could be an effective song leader. So, on Sunday afternoons at 4 o'clock, you're going to be here at the church building. And Brother Shelby Weathers is going to be teaching the class on song leading. You and these four or five other boys are going to be doing that. And in 90 days, I want you leading singing on Wednesday nights. And in 180 days, I want you leading singing on Sunday nights. And it says by the end of the year, you're going to be leading in the song leader rotation on Sunday morning. I want you to notice what was missing in that conversation. He didn't ask me if I wanted to. He said, this is what you're going to do because this is your service to God. I'm going to teach you to do this and you're going to be great at it. And I said, wow. And that little thing right there just changed me completely. And it defined my service to God today for the most part. You think of Brother Elrod was effective? Yeah, Brother Elrod was effective. It's how you use your awareness. An example of engagement. You ever read a story called The Gift of the Magi? The guy named O. Henry. I won't say his real name because it sounds really British and snooty. Stuart Warner or something or something like that. But he went by the pen name of O. Henry. And he wrote this short story about these two people, and this guy made $20 a week. This is back in the 1890s. He made about $20 a week. And, of course, their rent was, you know, most of that, and food was a lot of that. And his wife had been saving, and it was coming up, it was Christmas Eve, and she'd been saving, finding pennies on the ground and stuff for a whole year, and she had $1.78. to spend on a Christmas present, but he's worth so much more than that. And I really wanted to do something special for him, so she's just panicking. Can't do a thing for him now. So she just, all frazzled, runs through town to see what she can find for $1.78 to try to buy for her husband. And she had hair. And I mean she had hair down to her ankles. Beautiful hair that would have made the Queen of Sheba jealous, apparently, they said. You know, I mean, we're talking about, you know, this, that was her thing. She had this beautiful hair, and it was defined her. And she went by this wig shop and found that she could sell her hair and have enough money to buy him a present. So she did. And she got a week's pay, $20. So she took that. And she went, and he had a prized possession. He had a pocket watch that was his grandfather's pocket watch. And they said that King Solomon would have looked with envy on this thing. It was that nice. It was quite a piece. But they could barely eat, but they had that possession. Well, so she found a platinum chain that went perfectly with that watch and was able to buy it for $21. So she had 78 cents left. And she takes it home, and she's all proud. It's just going to look so good with that watch. And he comes in and sees her without any hair. And he's all worried that she's all worried that he's going to be mad because she cut her hair. It'll grow back. It'll grow back. That's what she said the whole time. It'll grow back. He says, it's not that. He says, he sold his watch to buy her some jewels, tortoise shell combs for her hair. So it's kind of like a little ironical thing back and forth, but the whole idea is you had a couple that took their treasure, took the thing that supposedly meant most to them, and they selflessly sacrificed that treasure for the other. I gave the most precious thing I have to make my other happy, to please them, to be exorbitant to them. And they did the same for me. And it was a good laugh in the end, and it actually cemented their relationship and all that. But still, so now he had a chain without a watch, and she had combs without hair. I'll tell you, though, it ain't all there, because the watch isn't going to grow back. Just not going to happen. Matthew 6:21 says, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. We need to make it our business to have our heart in each other's. hearts. My treasure needs to be in Kathy's heart. And your treasure needs to be in your significant's heart, your wife or husband. And you need to be in your children's heart that same way. James Thurber, 1972, inspired the movie The War Between Men and Women. I used to read some of his stuff. He's kind of funny. But there was that, they made a movie out of some of his comedy book writings about the war between men and women. But James Thurber actually had a very healthy respect for women. He says, somebody has said that a woman's place is in the wrong. That's fine. What the wrong needs is a woman's presence and a woman's touch. She is far better equipped than men to set it right. The condescending male in his pride and strength likes to think of the female as being soft, soft as snow. Then just wait till he gets hit by the snowball. Ladies, if you don't think you have power in the home and leadership in the home, you're just dead wrong. I rely upon Kathy to lead certain things because it relieves me of that leadership. We are a partnership, and together we're stronger than both of us could be individually. And as long as we have that bond, and I trust her, I trusted her with the leadership of the education of my children, and she did an incredible job. And she trusts me with my leadership to bring home some bacon and to get the food on the table and to help with that. And she trusts any decision I have in that. Well, whatever you need to do. I talked about retiring last December. If that's what you need to do, we'll make it work. She trusted my leadership in that. And sometimes you have to trust your children's leadership when they, because sometimes they can see things in you that you can't see. And you need to listen to those things and be engaged with them and interact with them so that they know that they can affect other people's lives. Because kids feel powerless today. And those kids that go into those schools and shoot up stuff like that and kill other children, they feel powerless in their lives. And Satan has provided them a leader, a way out of that. I'm going to go feel powerful in spite of everybody else. What a sad thing. What a horrible thing that leader happens to be. That's such a tragic thing. But Satan's going to provide that leader unless we do. And God has taught us how to do it. We need to use the things He showed us. We're going to start on this and we're going to finish it tomorrow, but I wanted to acquaint you with this. The four phases of a group. This is, they paid a lot of people a lot of money to come up with this, but it's kind of obvious. But it's nice to see it in print. Forming, storming, norming, and performing. Nice fancy words. Somebody probably got thousands of dollars for coming up with those in a row like that and writing up the plan. I'm sure they did. And that's all fine and dandy. But it is important that we understand the status of our family or any group that we're in at any point in time. Because it helps us to understand and be aware of what they need. By any group dynamic you have, this group right here, if we were to meet together every week for a common purpose of any kind, we would go through this. We're in the room together. And we've decided, every night for the next 6 weeks, we're going to come together and meet just like this. We've now formed. That's the easy part. Putting together a group is the easy part. And in families, it happens kind of automatically, doesn't it? Families, let me see. Oh, we got married. We just formed a group. Oh, got a rugrat. We just changed the team. Oh, got another rugrat. We just changed it again. Oh, we adopted a rugrat. We now have a different kind of thing. What happens is anytime you change a group in any way, shape, or form, it goes through something. The dynamic. Remember we talked about all those dynamics a while ago? They change. And if we understand where they are, it helps us, gives us power to approach them and to coach out of it. A death in the family. Somebody passes away, a child, a husband, a wife. That really changes the family, doesn't it? And it puts it in a different phase. The start of school, when a kid's first day of school, that changes what happens in the home. That changes the responsibilities in the home. A move, puberty. You think puberty doesn't change things? Oh. I'll tell you what phase we were in for a while there when it got to that. Dating. Oh, that changed a few things, too. I had to buy new shotguns. menopause, age, experience, and hormones. All of these things. I just recently, when I found out about my father's condition, I went from son to caregiver. My relationship changed. Now, he's in New Mexico, and I can't be there like I'd like to, but it changed my life. And it changed my mother's life. And now I find myself in a different phase of our relationship with my parents. Because used to, I mean, forming is the easy part. These things are just going to happen. Forms are thrown at us a lot of times. We don't build these groups. You know, yeah, we got married, but the kids came along and we had a hand in that. But, you know, those are situations. This is important right here. Storming. Because when you put a group together, what happens? They have to find their position. Forming again. Well, I just got the second. There we go. I'm there. Forming. Get a new marriage, new child, second time. Easy. Foster child or adoption. Grandma moves in. You think that doesn't change a family dynamic? Ouch. That can happen. You move to a new congregation. My world just changed. I now have new relationships to learn. New elders or a new preacher. I now have new relationships. Things have changed. Our dynamic. Things affect my life. But when we get to storming, we have jealousy and posturing and competition. And even in a family, you think a new child doesn't affect that first child? There's some storming going on there. Kids jealous. You get a puppy, some kids are jealous. You know, you have to be aware of what's going on in the hearts of your family when all these things happen. We have to learn to handle conflict because storming is when conflict is. And the better you are at leading your family out of conflict, the better you will be at handling this phase and getting everybody into a stage where everything can become normal and you can cruise for a while and you can take that stress-free part. You have to lose yourself and change from me to we. Remember I said that Kathy and I together are better than some of us? We is more powerful than she and me. You have to lose yourself. And it's only if you lose yourself and you become we and you now become family and you have identified yourself as family. We are the Millers. We are this group. And together we are what we are. And we are defined and we can say this is who we are. In love with the brethren, be tenderly affectionate one to another, in honor preferring one another. Now, I expected this word to be agape when I read this. It's not. Philostorgai, and I don't even know if that's even used. I didn't do the research to see if it's used anywhere else. That is a combination of philos, brotherly loving, like Philadelphia, and storge, that family needing love. It's a compound word for a type of love. It's like a fifth type of love in a way. And that tenderly affectioned one for another. That means I want to be sacrificial. That's the agape part. We've already talked about that. But I also need to recognize that I need to desire my family as a whole for what they are. And I need to have that passion for our family, the good passion, the one that draws us together and causes me to sacrifice for them and them to sacrifice for me. And when you've got person A and person B and they're willing to do everything to save that other person's soul and to see them successful in life if possible, that's a very powerful thing. That is a very powerful thing because that, like the gift of the Magi thing a while ago, you see how important that was to them to see the other one through. And that's just a nice little story telling us we need to be that concerned about the souls around us and especially about our family souls. And that will make you a powerful leader. And you need to take any tool, scripturally based tool that you can use to see that through. I'm going to stop there. It's a little after 8 o'clock. And I know that people will glaze over here in a few minutes. I will if you don't. I'm tired. But I want you to take something with you tonight, and that is that your relationships to everybody around you, not just your family. So, see, I have a relationship with Cookie over here. And we established a little bit of that last night because she is so expressive when you're speaking, and she tells me how I'm doing just by what her face is doing. And Matt and I, you know, we have a little bit of an understanding together, and we have a relationship. And you take all of those relationships that you can, and you build on them, and then you love each other, and that tenderly affectioned thing, and you grow together and you watch out for each other's souls. You watch out for each other's souls. And it's possible, and I don't know a lot of you real close, but it's possible that somebody here's soul needs help. And I wish I knew more about it at this point in time, but I just don't. And just like saying thank you tells other people what our needs are, sometimes we just have to come out and say it. I need prayers. I need help. If you need help from your brethren tonight, please make it known. And the greatest help that they can give you is introducing you to our Lord in the first place. So if you're not acquainted with Him permanently in baptism, then do that too. Make sure that you don't leave any organization, any group, any opportunity you have without making the best of your opportunity to save your own soul. The Bible says to work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Make it important to you. Make it just definitely important to you to make sure that you are saved and that when the end of this world comes, we can all gather on that throne in glory. That's good stuff. If you need that help, do so as we stand and sing.